two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, ten. This is a conversation with Mrs. Carrie Nelson in her home at 1002 North Fifth Street, August 24, 1982, at 9:30 a.m. Mrs. Nelson, I noticed, Shirley talked to you quite a while ago, and she said that you came here from Homer, and that sounded real interesting to me. How did it happen to be in Homer? Were your parents there? Were you born in Homer, Illinois?
No, I wasn't born in Homer. I was born in Chucky, Tennessee. And I came with my grandparents to Homer. I guess due to a flood and washed away most of Chucky. That's where I found myself when I got old enough to realize.
Yeah. Do you have any idea how they happened to come to Homer? That always sounds interesting to me because it's such a small town.
Well, I have often wondered. My grandmother told me most everything, but I don't remember her ever telling me how they got to Homer. But I would have supposed that the government, the United States government, probably.
Oh, yeah, you said it was their flood.
Yeah, uh-huh. Uh-huh. And it was in the early 1900s. See, I was born June 4th, 1900, so I think it must have been soon after that.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting. Then you came to Champaign.
Mm-hmm.
And
that
you
was
were
in
about
1916.
Yeah, you were 16 years old.
Yes.
How did you happen to come to Champaign?
Well, my uncle Frank Ernest, who was a few years older than I, had graduated from high school, and he wanted to go to college, and they were trying to decide whether he should come up back and forth on the interurban, which went right by where we live in the country, or move, and they decided they'd move. So they moved to Champaign.
What kind of work did they find?
Well, my husband worked as a...
Well, did you marry then?
Oh, no, I was just 16 when we moved up here.
Uh-huh.
I was in high school.
I see.
And, He joined the service. You see, he came, my uncle came and went to university, and he took agriculture. And then the war was, I guess, being, I don't know what you call it, organized, but it was about to take place. And the boys were leaving for the service, and my Uncle Bob, who was a few years older than Frank, joined the service. Or he didn't join. He talked my Frank into joining, and then he backed out. But they drafted him later.
Oh.
But then my young uncle of mine was the first man in the Company L to be killed in Germany.
Mm-hmm. Then
and we first lived down there on Water Street in Hines' house. You know, they had three houses along there. We rented the little house. Well, then after that, we bought the place on Park.
Were there very many people living around there on Water Street?
Nobody but the Hines.
There were the two families then?
Three. There was Jesse, and I don't remember what the older father's name was, and then there was Frank Hines.
Mm-hmm.
But he had moved into the house with the older people, and his house was empty, and that's when we rented.
Oh. Then you moved to Park Street.
Mm-hmm.
Were there very many blacks living around
Park
Street at that time?
Well, yes, in that block. Let's see, there were the Hineses, the Woodruffs, and let's see, the old lady, what is her name? Her son was our clerk for a long time, Henderson's. His name was Henderson. Was her name Henderson? His mother, James Henderson?
Yeah.
They lived there.
Yeah. They lived on Park Street?
Uh-huh.
They did.
Yeah, they was living there. And let me see. May Jones.
Mm-hmm.
May, her name wasn't Jones then. It was something else.
Yeah.
I forget. and her sister. And I think that's all it was there when we came.
It was a mixed neighborhood then, wasn't it?
It was all mixed. Park Street was.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Were there very many blacks living, let's say, south of Washington Street? Then?
South of Washington Street. Yes, there was quite a few. There was Elmer Brown had an apartment building down there. Well, when we first moved, he had the apartment building, and his parents hadn't died then. They lived on Clark, and he lived on White, I think. And Dabney Jones was on Clark. And let me see. Later on, Miss G moved down on White. And the Pennies, George Penny and his family.
So it was kind of scattered, though.
Yes, it was kind of scattered. Uh-huh. And then Nettie Cook's grandfather lived down there. Was Burnham Hospital there then?
I'm not sure.
I don't know what, I don't remember what it was, but they lived across the street there from Burnham, where Burnham is now.
You said you were in high school when you came here. Mm-hmm. Where did you go to high school?
Before King.
When you got here.
Champagne High School.
Champagne Senior High, and that was on Green Street.
Uh-huh, the old Edison.
Uh-huh, and you graduated from there?
Mm-hmm, with Helen Height and Faye Hines. As I remember, we were the only three blacks that graduated that year.
Oh, just three of them. Mm-hmm. How do you feel, looking back on it now, how do you feel you were treated then?
Well, I think it was real nice. Of course, it was a lot of things we couldn't participate in, like swimming. I don't think any touch sports. But the thing I remember most was a maypole dance. They used to have a maypole dance in May.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was a lot of fun, to learn how to wind the maypole.
Yeah. And you did participate in
that was gym? What do you call it? And Katie Gray, I don't know whether she was in our class, Katie Fuller, her name was, or was a year behind us, because she dropped out. She didn't ever graduate. But she was a dancer. She had taken dance, and I can remember her. She used to do all the fancy stuff.
She did. Mm-hmm. In
the
maypole
dance. I mean, they'd have extra things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What did you do then? If you remember back to then, for fun?
Oh, we had lots of fun. It was group stuff. We didn't have any organized, except for the dances, and we'd have to sneak off. Our parents didn't want to go to dances, but we always got around to go. But we had, on Sunday afternoons, we'd get together. In the morning, Salem would have their Sunday school, and in the afternoon, Bethel would have theirs. And we went to both Sunday schools. Mm-hmm. Of course, that took in both crowds of groups of young people. And we'd go after the Sunday school at Bethel, we'd go mostly to the Crystal Lake and ride in the boats. And then we'd have to be back to Salem to BYPU. And I don't remember us having Allen Endeavor until later, till my kids got in. I don't think Bethel had it then. Mm-hmm. But we did have a Phyllis Palathia class.
Yeah.
And that was real interesting. Mm-hmm.
Then
go to people's
around
houses
church
and make
then.
Candy and pull taffy.
Yeah.
And we just had, I think, a lot more fun now than the kids have now.
Yeah. Then, let's see, when did you marry then?
I married October the 1st, 1916. I graduated in June.
Oh.
June.
You graduated and went ahead and got married. Uh-huh. Huh? You married early.
Yeah, I married right away.
Where did you live then?
Well, we rented your uncle's house. He had moved to Gary to work in the steel mines, they said. Mm-hmm. And somebody told Cecil about the house, and I think your dad rented it to him. Ray Scott.
Where was
on
that?
Poplar
on Poplar
Street.
Street.
Uh-huh. And I thought that was the most beautiful house.
Well, your first house would be, wouldn't it?
Well, it had been remodeled.
Had it?
Uh-huh, and it was so nice. Had a large living room, big as all of this. and then two bedrooms and dining room and kitchen.
Yeah.
But they hadn't put the plumbing and stuff in yet, but it was there, you know, already. But they decided to leave, so. And when the people bought the house out from under me, I just cried and cried. I thought that was the end of the world.
That was, let's see.
Claude Scott.
Yeah. How many, were there very many people living around there then on Poplar Street?
Mm-hmm, yes. It was a pretty side, that street and Vine Street were the two beautiful streets on this side of town. Both of them were paved as far up as it went.
Mm-hmm.
And it stopped there, I think, at Tremont. I think it stopped by a lot there. And your grandparents lived on Tremont.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was real nice. The lawns I can't remember all the people. There was a grocery store on that street. The old hotel is there, and I had never been built. It was that home. Mm-hmm. And the white and colored lived there on there.
How they got along together?
Fine. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was really nice. Yeah, the neighborhood's never been the same.
No, I can agree with that. how about the children? Where did they go to school?
Lawhead, and they never went to Willow. Eunice went to Marquette. I had a lot of trouble getting her in because at that time my husband had gotten a job as janitor at Lawhead, and Mr. Nichols was the superintendent of schools, and he didn't think that the segregation had started, I guess. And they didn't want us to cross the boundary line to Marquette. And he said that I should set an example because my husband's working for the school system. I said, well, he's really working for me because we're taxpayers and the schools are run by the taxes, and Eunice is going to Marquette. If she don't go to Marquette, she's not going anyplace. So finally we had a showdown and she got to go.
Was it just that there weren't many black children going to Marquette?
Yeah, all those other kids that lived over at that time, there was a whole lot of kids lived over in that. I don't guess too many, but over there, see, the people had children. There was Negroes lived over there in that neighborhood. I don't know where, but those kids going there, but not as many as they were later.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was such a tussle about that, they finally closed Willard and tore it down.
Yeah.
And then all the kids went there.
It was a balloon factory or mm-hmm. something to start with.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But you did get her in there.
Yeah, she was there.
And the rest of them went.
Well, then later, before we moved over here, though, we lived on Market Street. And the kids went to Columbia. Not Columbia. Was that Columbia? Yeah. Columbia School.
Mm-hmm. Columbia and Gregory.
Mm-hmm. Gregory is the one I'm talking about. Oh. Columbia's up here. That's where Helen. I don't think any color ever went up there, but Taylor and Helen. And maybe
Columbia?
Uh-huh. Maybe Taylor's cousin, Marie Beatty. Mm-hmm. I don't think any. And Marion, probably. That was a really white school.
Columbia?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Gregory was.
It was mixed.
Mm-hmm. Did you participate in the PTA or anything
mm-hmm.
like that?
Mm-hmm. And we had a Girl Scout troop. The Girl Scout troops then were separate but equal, as they call it. And Helen Height and myself and Winifred Green and Katie Gray and Mrs. Connell, I think. We had quite a large Girl Scout troop.
You did. Mm-hmm. You were active with them then.
Mm-hmm. We used to take them camping. I don't know, the camp was over that way. I can't remember the name of the camp. Wahana, Waha, something. It was over in there near Muhammad. Because we used to walk the kids to Muhammad. They had a potato chip factory, and they'd give the kids bags of potato chips.
Knew they were going to get some potato chips on the way.
Uh-huh.
Then, I guess the... What by that time, of course, your children were getting older, what kind of social life did you have, you and your husband?
Well,
what were some of the things you were able to do?
My husband liked to fish, and a group of us would go a lot of times to Charleston. There was a river there that you could just catch beautiful fish. That's the only place I can ever remember where you could really catch a lot of fish. Mm-hmm. And we'd camp out there on weekends. And that was a lot of fun. The Grays and myself and Cecil and his brother Wendell and Andrew Jackson would go with us sometimes. And we'd stay over the weekend and had little pup tents that we'd sleep in until Katie and I got frightened. The Ku Klux Klan was running in, and they would come out there and camp, and we'd hear the bands and see the fires. And I was just so I wouldn't go, because the men would go so far they couldn't even hear us call. Mm. You know, they like to walk up and down the riverbanks.
Do you remember any activities of the Ku Klux Klan in Stampede?
Well, just burning fire crosses, and marching up and down. They'd have be on horses and have parades up and down like University Avenue.
Parade? You remember about when
just
that
like
was?
Just like you see now. You didn't know that?
Oh, no.
Oh, yes.
Can you remember about when that was?
It must have been in the 1918. Yeah, it was after we were married.
It was after the war.
It was, when things were pretty tough during the Depression and things, and you just coming out of it. But yeah, they had the old Firestone building, I think that was the name of it, over there in Urbana. It burned down. You know, there, it used to be just beyond Kroger Store. Kroger Store wasn't there, but that's where it was.
Mm-hmm.
I think it had been a theater or something. And it burned to the ground, and I think that sort of dispersed it.
Well, did they meet there? Is that what the...
Mm-hmm, that was at headquarters.
That was at headquarters.
I think that was, if I remember correctly.
A lot of people don't believe that they were ever that active in Stampede.
Oh, they burned a fire cross right there.
Where?
When Cecil got the job, you know, that janitor...
You mean here in your yard?
Yeah, right there. There's a door right there to go out from the basement.
Yeah.
And the neighbors called me one night. That was during the war. I think it was during the closing in of the war, because the boys went home. Well, nobody here but Eunice and Cecil and I, and all these people, I forget their names, used to live right next door to the Legion Hall. That was a grocery store then. Mm-hmm. And the girls had been out, I guess, on a date, and I was in the bed. Cecil was in Chicago, I think, at the Legion convention. And the phone rang, and they said, there's a fire across, Miss Nelson, burning beside your door, like scared me to death. And I went in the bathroom, and the flames was going way up past the thing. And I called the police, and they never did come.
They didn't come?
I don't remember them ever coming. The neighbors came. Like scared me to death.
Yeah, well,
Cecil had gotten this job. You know, the janitor had molested a child or something, a girl, a little girl. And they fired the white janitor. And Cecil got the job, and that's when they...
That was down to where it's
the... At the Longhead School, and then they burnt one in the yard down there.
At the school?
Mm-hmm. They didn't want Negroes to have them jobs.
Well, all the children going there were black, weren't they?
No, uh-uh. When my kids went there, the school was predominantly white.
It was.
But then in about a year or so, they didn't send the notices to the white, to the black family. They sent them to the white, but... There's a little woman, I can't call her name, she still works for Eisner's, out at the country fair. Well, she wasn't working for them then, but she used to live up there in the house where Pretty Roberts was living, or someplace up in there. And her husband was a bus driver. And one day I met her up with her on the bus, and she asked me, did I get a letter? And I said, what kind of letter? She said, we got a letter from the school board saying that they was hiring a black teacher, and the school would probably, and they had a black janitor, I think. Cecil was already the janitor. And we had bought this house there. And if they wanted to move their children, they'd better move them now, because probably after it started, I don't know what the letter said, but that was the gist of it, that maybe it would be hard because the Negroes would be trying to move theirs too, and they wouldn't even let them move theirs. And she told me all this, see.
She was white.
Uh-huh. And I come home and I told her, Cecil couldn't believe it. So we called Mr. Nichols, and he hum-hawed around, and he finally admitted that they thought the time had come for supposed to have a black school up here. And it was going to gradually get them out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how come that house was sold.
So they were gradually, people were moving out,
moving out of there. See, when we first moved up here, let's see, I don't think there were any colored in that block, except on the corner, that old man that used to own that grocery store, you know, he got killed in it. And then, where Ora lived was white. And, well, all the houses were white, I think. Willis C. Powell's mother lived up on the corner of Miss Jordan. Reverend Crowder lived over there, and Prairie Roberts' people, Golder Sales.
And that was over where the park is now.
Mm-hmm. And Johnny Walker lived on up there. But they were mostly just white and black, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly white.
How did they get along together?
Fine. Well, nothing said until they started the school stuff. And the white people just suddenly disappeared. They left.
Hmm. Yeah. It does happen that way.
Mm-hmm.
Then, let's see, I think, well, did you work?
No, I just moved to do. I did party work at night because the children were small.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't start working until I think Eunice was in high school before I started working regularly.
Mm-hmm. Eunice was the youngest.
Mm-hmm. And she's 6 years younger than Hester.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I used to do party work at night.
Mm-hmm. They're also saying here that you had something to do with Douglas Center in its beginning. Do you remember when and how it began?
I didn't have nothing when Caesar was on the cardboard there. I don't remember what year it began. I had some. I gave them to Ernest. Well, these were records when Ernest was.
When he was
hit in the center.
Yeah, he was directing.
Uh huh.
And
I gave them to him. I showed them to Shirley. That's the youngest
one. Youngest one.
And the wages were so cheap, we were laughing about what they was paying.
Mm-hmm.
They wasn't paying
nothing.
And the things cost such a little bit. Oh, it was really something. I'm sorry I gave it to him. But he said, I showed him to him. He said, well, he'd like to have him, so I didn't have him. Nell Hayes was, I think, director of the whole business.
Mm-hmm. I think Mrs. You remember the, what we call daycare now, but the kindergarten they had then,
mm-hmm.
I think Mrs. Edwards was quite active.
Oh, yeah, she was. Well, that's quite a bit later, though. When she got it, it was, I don't know, but when we still was living over on Market Street, Marion Johnson was a teacher up there, and that was when Eunice was just old enough to go to kindergarten. I guess she was sure wasn't really old enough, about three, but Marion used to take some get her every morning and bring her over to that daycare, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, I think Alice Scott and Hester taught up there, and I don't remember.
Hester's your
mm-hmm.
next to the oldest daughter.
No, she's getting next to the youngest.
Oh, yeah, okay. Well, let's get your children straight now. There's, what, two boys and four girls,
uh-huh.
Right? Okay. And I noticed here, too, that Eleanor, who was the oldest girl,
uh-huh.
taught the home economics and sewing.
See, she was in the university in home ec, and she had graduated for the 4 years, and then she went into what they call Smith Hughes,
mm-hmm.
which now it's just, I guess, higher education in home ec. And it's in with the agricultural department, I guess, with the government. And Miss Perkins that was over that so long, I forget her name.
I don't remember.
She's dead now, and she wanted Eleanor to start a group out here in the for the girls, and she'd also get cribbed. I guess that'd be like writing a thesis or something. And she started Winona Jones and all that group. She taught that for a while, and then she left and went to Morris Brown to teach. And then after she married Tom and came back, then she started up an adult group.
Here?
Mm-hmm, over at the Senate.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. And then they left, and I think Bola took it over.
Yeah, sewing class.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I remember that. And then you had a son, Ernest, that was director there for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So you have been pretty active with you,
well,
one way or another.
Yeah, back of it.
And Mr. Nelson was a member of the park
board.
Well, it wasn't called park board then, was it?
No, it was, I don't know, but here, it's been since he died. I guess about 5 or 6 years ago, but they had, maybe not that long, they sent me a letter and told me they were going to, they had this plaque made, you know, with the names of the regional members that started the park system,
mm-hmm.
and his name was on there, and they had all the people that were living coming. I took the girls, they were the ones who needed me.
Well, where'd they have it out to
the center?
They did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Time they gave some recognition.
That's right.
Well, can you think of anything you'd like to tell me about some of those times back there, about the city, about Champaign, as to how it developed? For one thing, you said that people moved out of here. Where do you feel that the people came from that moved in? You know, you said several of the whites were leaving and taking their children and moving to other areas. Where do you think the
really
other people
know.
Came from?
I don't really
from?
Know. There was a large large group of people that moved in at some place, I guess, in the South. And I don't know why they came. I guess they were better in their condition or something. Because a lot of the houses were just standing around empty and they just moved into them. And I don't think they ever had to buy them because the houses were just not, I don't know, especially over there on Beardsley. They were nice people. The neighborhood stayed pretty good for a long time, but then it went through the process of what it's doing now, I think. And that's what I was telling somebody yesterday. It seems like old times, you'd be afraid to stick your head out the door, a bullet would come by, and it's
mm-hmm.
been almost that bad again.
Back in the gang-banging 60s?
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
it was kind of bad then. How do you feel about that time long back there? I guess it was long about the 60s.
Well, before the 60s, when we went to buy this house, Mrs. Edwards called us, and we'd never been able to buy a house, and she told us this house was for sale. Well, I couldn't even remember the neighborhood because I'd never lived up here, and I hadn't come up here that much. And so we came and looked at it, and we thought it was a nice house and what we needed for 6 children. And so Cecil was working for C.A. Kyler, I think, and down he had a furniture store downtown, and I was working for Mr. Spaulding, and his son was Ben Nelson, and he had something to do with the First Federal. I don't know what he was. Kyle was the president, I think. But anyway, Cecil went and asked him, and the bonus, you know, had been paid for World War I, and I think he got $800 or $900, and he'd been wanting to buy a car, and I said, no, I don't think that money, we're going to get a house with that money, that's going to be the down payment. So he went to Kyle and told him about it, and he said, well, Cecil, are you sure you want to move up in that neighborhood? It's going to be getting kind of rough up there. And he said, well, those are his people, and he thought he ought to stick with them. So then I asked Mr. Nelson, and he said, well, if Kyler says you ought to get the loan, okay. So they did okay the loan, and the house was sold at public auction.
So this one?
Mm-hmm. At the courthouse. And Hazel Unrich's father, Cecil was on the recreation board, I think. And her father was a lawyer, and Mr. Kyler told Cecil, said, just get some one of your lawyer friends or get a lawyer to bid for you. Don't let them know that you're black because they'll probably try to run the process.
Yep.
So that's how I got it. They bid. You know, she bid it in for it.
So you weren't too scared to move into the
area? Oh, no, there wasn't nothing much going on there. There wasn't that many people up here.
Yeah.
They, up this way, there was a lot of people. But in that block there was only about... There was one old white lady down there. She owned a lot of them lots. And down there where the poor Elder Long lives, that was white. Oh, and over there was white. Wasn't that many colored people up there? And up there where oil boat was white. I think all the way on up this side was white. There wasn't no houses over there.
They were people with children?
Mm-hmm. Some of them had children. This is about the age of my kids.
Mm-hmm. So they moved and took
the
children.
They've been here for years. I guess they built these houses.
Yeah. I think there are, what, one or two families still living here? There isn't there one over on Beardsley?
Why?
Yeah.
Not of the original. I don't think there's anybody left. Let's see. I was on there. There. The Ronsvilles, you know, they came in, I think, mostly to get the situation of the sanitary sewage fixed over there. And the people themselves been complaining ever since they went there, and they didn't do nothing.
Yeah.
But since Mrs. Ronsville's there, they're doing something. Trying to.
I just happened to think, too, during the 60s, urban renewal came along. How did you feel about that?
Oh, we thought that was something awful.
Yeah. Yes, a lot of people did.
And it's gone through a lot of phases. It went through a good phase, and now it looks like it's going back into a bad phase.
Yeah. Yeah, how do you feel about the Oak Ash area?
Terrible. I mean, I'm sure that a lot of the houses needed fixing. But the Oak Street, I think, if the city had used foresight and fixed the bone ditch so it wouldn't overflow, that wouldn't have been, because there were nice houses on Oak Street. Most of those were nice homes. I can remember Miss Nellie Bradley, you know, she owned that pretty house down there where Sammy Haney had his first dinner home. That was a beautiful house. I mean. But the water came up all the time. And now the water is still coming up, and the people, I guess, is gone.
Yeah, well, everybody's gone from over there. I can attest to that.
Poplar Street, that beautiful street, they just let it deteriorate.
Yeah.
It was so pretty. I thought that was, it was paved, they had sidewalks, and the houses were all neat. And Miss Penny, her name, she changed it to Hammer then, and she built that beautiful new home. Now that's where we really did a lot of stomping and playing at her
house. Did she build that?
She built that from the ground up.
She did. That was on the corner of
Vine and
Poplar.
And she owned the house back of her.
You say you had good times there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a big house, and they had a pen and everything. And her daughter was about the same age as Helen.
When you say they had a piano, you meant that was your music for dancing?
Mm-hmm. Had to dance, and the kids could play the piano then. You know.
Uh-huh. Yeah, everybody had their little song they played.
That's right.
And then,
well, Faye Hines, he was a piano player. He played in the orchestras.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I vaguely remember him.
I guess he really did still play out in New York when he got too old, probably. He got a job where they said in the postal department, but he still played.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's dead now, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
What about dancers? Were there big dancers back when
they'd have Well, we had a band here, you know, your dad was in the band.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Martin, way back, Mr. Martin, Cliff Jordan. Oh boy, they could really play. And they had halls. I guess those old places are still down there. There was a hall down there back of what used to be Lillard and Getman. I don't know what that building used to be now. It must be.
Or was that on University Avenue?
No, downtown on Main Street.
Oh, on Main Street, yeah.
Right there back. Down the street there from
Market Street.
I don't know where it's Market now. I think the News Gazette's on one corner, and the old Lillard and Getman buildings across the street. But back down there, there was, you'd go up a stairway, wide stairway, and upstairs was a huge hall, dance hall. Mm-hmm. They had dance halls, and I don't think we was the
Masons one of met there, didn't they?
Yes, they did later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then all that on Main Street, along in there where Lillard and Getman, where that those stock market places are, that was all clear. What is her name? What was Nancy's aunt's name?
Jordan.
Jordan. That was the barbershop, you know, in the Panatorium. They had a cleaning and pressing place in there. And that was all black. And let's see, on the corner where Willis's was, on this end, going down, I guess that is Walnut. There were black barbershops down there, and upstairs, black people had apartments.
Had apartments up over the...
You know, Sanford Brown used to live up there.
Oh, this was downtown Champaign.
Mm-hmm, down in the center.
On Main Street.
Mm-hmm. Huh. Yeah, they had the barbershop.
Were they barbershops for whites or blacks?
White. Colored people did the barbering. And,
yeah.
And Mr. Green, he used to have, I can't place where his place was. But he had a place where he, you could take your suits in and they'd, I don't know how he cleaned them, but they'd clean them and press them.
Well, it's hard to picture it now. I kind of remember it down in the basement at, it's downstairs on the corner of Main and Church and Neal. Because I remember that going with Vivian and Winifred mm-hmm. down there to get some change
mm-hmm.
to go to the show. Uh-huh.
Well, I couldn't place where he was. And you know, down there where, by the Orphan Theater, well, the Orphan Theater wasn't there then, I don't think, if it was there. Daisy Jones's mother, I think, Angeline, somebody, they lived along there. You know, there was a little street they called Clock Street in there back of the Orphan Theater.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there was colored people lived there. I think in there somewhere was where Edna Johnson's mother and him first lived when they came there. I can't remember because I wasn't too old then. 16 was young.
Yeah. Then.
And I don't remember, but I know going through there, I remember seeing the people. Of course, the Nelsons had the grocery store down there, and the Lee brothers.
That old
building is still.
The Nelsons were your
Cecil's
husband's
uh-huh.
mother and dad.
Yeah,
and they had a grocery store.
Mm-hmm, right down there by, on Hickory by the tracks. It was an alleyway went there, but through there between them and the tracks. And Mrs. Green and them lived on Hickory. And Albert and Maurice Lee had, you know, they built radios. Mm-hmm. I guess you'd call it, I don't know what kind of shop it was, but they made the radio. That building's still standing. In. That's where they
where
had their
that?
Business.
Mm-hmm.
On the corner of Columbia and Hickory, on this side of the street.
Yeah.
That
building's still there. I remember that now.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And you know the Mrs. Everhart and them, they lived on down.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't call him Brown. Ollie Brown and them, they lived down there. And Miss Benton lived farther on out in Taylor Thomas.
Do you remember any other businesses? Like you mentioned, the grocery store that Mr. Nelson had and the barber shops and so on. Mm-hmm. Were there any other businesses in any other part of town?
Well, at one time, Mr. Person had a store downtown Fish Street.
Yeah.
There was a little complex that he built up there.
Mm-hmm.
Where Gag Anna finally took over. And they had the beauty parlor. There was beauty parlor business where I was thriving then. Most of the women had little shops and things in their homes.
Mm-hmm.
I guess still like they do now. But there was one down here on Fish Street that Margaret got her training. You know Margaret?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Margaret Mudd.
Mm-hmm.
But there,
and there was a bakery shop, Mr. he died in Arizona. He was a minister at Salem. What was his name? I can't call it anyone, but they had a shop down there. Do you remember just in there, long in there, where they got that funny little Toonerville house down here on Fifth Street? I don't know what it is. It's got a great big high fence up in front of it. It was in there someplace.
On Fifth Street?
Mm-hmm.
Between what street?
between Columbia and Vine. We used to go there and get fresh bread.
They had a bakery there?
Mm-hmm. Had a big little store or something. First name it turned into a big...
Oh, that little place they got there.
No, they built that. That wasn't there. I don't know what that thing is. They built anything.
Yeah. Well, that was... with a lot of the houses have been, too, with lean-tos where...
I was laughing about that yesterday. We were sitting out there waiting for your mother. I said, what is all them little houses? They got just a conglomeration of them back in there. Some one of them's tin. It stands up higher than the rest of them.
There is some, I remember some of that housing where as the family grew, people would build on another room. And of course, they weren't well built, but then it was another room for somebody to
help take
care of the family.
Well, that's what happened after the war down there in the Ash Oak area, back up in here. But before rehabilitation started, I think a lot of those houses had, what happened to them? They're the city to them now. But they used to have them made out of tin and everything, clear up there, almost up to where the Wesley Park is.
Yeah.
All kind of little shacks. People couldn't find any place to stay, so they built them out of anything. And I think they do that in most towns.
Yeah?
Watts.
Yeah.
Have you ever been to Watts, California?
No.
That was the way it was before the Revolution. They said they had an anniversary out there, and this the first time they've had a riot. I don't know whether it was this week or last week, but the people got to ride. I said, well, there wasn't much there to ride over.
Wasn't too much left. Well, during that rioting time here, do you remember much that was torn up, or do you think it was as bad as it may have been in some other places?
Well, it could have been a lot worse, because upstairs I got holes in my wall where they shot through this house.
Is that so?
I guess they were just shooting each other. I don't know what they were shooting at.
Do you feel there's any of that going on now?
Undercurrent. Not as it was then, but it's between factions. Not between white and black, I don't know.
Different groups of people trying to stay straight or get straight or something, right?
Well, you see, there's no jobs, and then a lot of people... I think people have gotten into a way of life. A lot of them don't want jobs. They just want to work. I think a lot of people have the idea they'd just like to work over all the rest of all. But to get a good job, you have to keep working at it.
Yeah. How do you feel, what do you think most people have, kind of work most people here have done?
You mean over the years?
Yeah.
Well, I think
what
most
kind
of
jobs have they had?
They've done, I guess, whatever they could find to do. A few people were self-employed, like I think Mr. Caldwell was later self-employed, and maybe Nettie's father. He was a lather. And John Pickens, he was a plaster constructor. And then a lot of them worked for general construction. And of course, as time went on, they could get different kinds of jobs. There's quite a few in the post office now, I think. And in the school system, different things. There's so many more things that people are doing that wasn't heard of back then.
Yeah. What kind of jobs did they have when you first came here? What kind of jobs did you have?
I don't think they had many jobs. They had mostly the campus.
And what did they do?
The men were the porters to fill the houses. And maybe they had maids that came. Some that did all the... Well, they had men and women in the sororities, too, because the heavy work the men were doing. And they had cooks and mostly cleaning jobs. I don't really know. Railroading, that was a big option. Railroads used to have lots of people.
Yeah.
But that's paid out, too. I wonder if the railroads are finally going to dry up.
Seems like it, doesn't it?
And now the tracks are not going to be able to keep up.
Yeah.
But they made a little money, but I think that they were surprised. They thought that most of the property up here was absentee owners, or I don't know what they thought, but I don't know if this is true. You probably could verify that. They said when they investigated that predominantly the houses was owned by the people.
Yeah, that's true.
And the city had thought all the time, you know, that they didn't own.
Yeah,
but they just didn't have the means. Like I told them, when we bought this place, there was a big brick barn back here, two-story. And there was people living in the front downstairs and in the back. Well, they said it had been a dairy. That's what it was built for. And, of course, as sanitation came along, they couldn't do that anymore. People had cows and they had so they had to use other dairies. And then the people that owned this, I guess, just made it into an apartment downstairs. It's upstairs, it's just a sort of a collection of antiques, I guess. I guess we've got a cuckoo clock that was several hundred pounds that she found up there upstairs. And I said, I should take it, but you found it, you take it. And then Gene won't let it, he don't like the cuckoo, so he stopped the cuckoo. But it's pretty. But anyway, the people just made do with what they had, I think. They were more industrious, maybe, or more, I don't know what you'd call it. But they just knew how to use their hands. I think a lot of people have forgotten how to do things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, anyway, when it came time to for rehabilitation, they was told us we'd have to, they'd have to tear that house down and we'd have to do something about it. So Cecil got Mr. Tutt and he tore that building down. They tore it down. Since then, I maybe I'd have been better off and left to stay back there and they'd have had the house.
Yeah, fixed it up into apartments.
Well, no, I'd have been gone waiting.
Oh, yeah. Have you thought of leaving?
Yes, I more so now than ever because, see now, the park was a beautiful place. They never had any problems there, but now it's commencing to be kind of a problem center.
Oh, is it?
Hangouts. People hang out over there. But since this event, I need to go on that too.
Okay. Some people have thought that maybe people came here. The question sometimes is asked, why do you think people came to Champaign? How'd they happen to land in?
Why, they're still coming. Do you know they're pouring in here now?
Yeah. What do you think would bring them to Champaign?
Well, I think it's a pretty good town to live in. And there seems to be work here. Now, it seems like that the people who have lived here a long time can't find any work, but the newcomers, they can go out to university and find jobs, buy homes. Mm-hmm. And they're not buying up here, they're buying way out on the other side. Most of them seem like they come with enough money to pay for a house. And most of them, for the most part, are good citizens, but it's the kids, I think, that are. And I guess that's not only a matter of blacks, it's whites and all nationalities and all over the world that children are sort of find themselves a different kind of people. I don't know. They don't have nothing to do, and now they can't go to school. It's costing so much. The cost of living's gone up, so.
Some people have said they thought maybe one reason there were so many blacks that stopped off here was because they were on their way to Chicago, maybe, and just stopped here, or...
A lot of them leaving Chicago coming here.
Yeah.
You know, when they built Mount Olive Manor, most of them people they put in there come from, yeah, that's when we were doing that interview, and they was from Chicago, Detroit, St. Louis.
They had come here recently from?
I came here specially to set up residence to get an apartment.
Well, they fixed them all right, didn't
they? They sure tore them down.
They boarded up now. I can remember some people stopping off here from, let's say that a circus or something would come to town, and some people have stayed.
They wouldn't go along
with
the circus,
yeah.
They'd stay there.
Or railroad jobs where they stopped and stayed. Do you know of anyone who stayed back there?
Oh, a lot of people came up there. They used to have a little shanty town up there around the roundhouse where some of them lived, and then they got that far. You see, the railroad would bring them. They'd bring the husband. And then the men, I guess they'd send for the wives, and then some of our better citizens are not out here like that. But it's not the people, I think, not the hard-working people that are a detriment to a community. It's the people who have dreams And if the dreams don't work out, then they just do something else.
Do you remember very much about the area up there? I'd forgotten about that, the area up there around the roundhouse.
No, I don't remember too much about it. I know Cecil used to, we always managed to have old cars, and we'd go out that way. Cecil, there was a beach or something up there that fished in, and you'd see the people. And you know, the IC, Illinois Central, used to have a picnic every, I think it was in the summertime. I don't remember, maybe in August or something. Oh, whether you remember or not. And they'd bring in people on the trains for an all-day picnic up there. There was a roundhouse, a picnic ground way up there someplace. Do you remember that?
Yeah, it's kind of vague.
We'd go out there because it was a little excitement, you know.
I wonder why they brought them from other places. Just because it was their area?
Mm-hmm. It didn't seem like anybody came but blacks. I don't remember seeing no whites. Maybe there was whites there, but I didn't notice any.
I do kind of remember people living up around there. I think Mrs. Smith lived there.
And then on up the road at Loda. See, that was a lot of Negroes up there. That's where Helen Johnson and that's where originally came from. I imagine they came with the railroad.
Mm-hmm.
But now they got cars, so they don't have to come with the railroad.
Yeah.
Riding.
Ride on in.
Mm-hmm.
Stay a while.
And churches. See, there's just so many churches. They start in a church everywhere. They got one corner of 4th and Tremont, and one over there across from the school. Those are two. Now, those are nice churches. They're really being built right. Then the little houses are located around. They got a church.
Yeah. Who are some of the more important people that helped in the development of Champaign? Some that you might think of and what they did?
I don't really know. I think probably... there were quite a bunch of politicians. I tell you, one organization I think helped was the Civic League, which I don't guess has been in existence maybe for 30 years, has it?
No, I don't think I've heard of it. What, can you remember what it did?
Well, they were instrumental in securing jobs, you know, breaking the barriers down, getting better jobs for people.
Who was ahead of that?
Well, Harold Gray and Richard Edwards. I guess your dad was in it. I don't know. I think he was wrong. Maybe Dr. DeFay, Dr. Ellis. I think that's why they named Dr. that project after Dr. Ellis. He was instrumental, but then he died early.
Yeah.
And never been able to bring another black doctor in since he left.
No. You remember the other black doctor we had?
Dr. Rowan, he's the daddy of my older kids.
He was.
He brought them into the world.
Uh-huh.
He and Mrs. Rowan. And they lived on Healy. They never lived in this neighborhood.
No,
I don't think the people realized they were one of us.
No, because they were very light, wasn't they? Both
white.
Of them.
It was white.
Yeah. And I think, as I remember, he used to ride bicycles to his patients.
And Mr. Lee, I think he didn't actually. I don't know even where he was living, I guess, when it started. I don't think he belonged to that, but I think he did his part on the campus, you know, because they did have records. That's what I was telling Shirley. Now, they used to have that over there in the library at the university, but they say it's not over there anymore. I don't know where it is.
What's that?
The records of the old, I guess, Mr. Lee, maybe, and your dad, and people that worked at the university. But I guess what the new people consider as important to Champaign, maybe it ain't important anymore.
I don't know. What was Mr. Lee's job?
He was the secretary, I think, to the president. And he was, I guess you would call him, what do they call head secretary?
Well, yeah.
I don't know what there's a name for it.
Administrative safety, yes, or something like that.
But I know he was instrumental in keeping the AKs in the house. He'd always try to get something. The university would help him, you know, mm-hmm. the official. And way back when they was trying to get the students into better housing, you see, at one time they couldn't hardly, black students can't stay anywhere except out in town. And it's been a struggle, and it seems like it's gone on back. Of course, now I guess not necessarily. They got the dorms, they got the money, yeah. to live there.
Yeah, do you remember many people that kept students?
Mm-hmm. I think Miss Wells and Lena Lewis, your Aunt Edna. Let me see, Miss Watson. And he used to be the head director of our choir. What was his name? Scott?
Yeah. Would you say that students were more a part of the community then?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they used to, I think they, I don't know whether they were inspirational to the kids then, but they would come out in the community more. At least maybe they just, maybe I don't know it now, they may go out now, but I don't think they do now like they used to.
I think you're right in saying that they were inspirational, because I can remember looking up to them, mm-hmm. you know, because yeah. they were
because
in
they were
school.
Students,
uh-huh. Yeah, they were students in school.
And the Mosses, that's a family we shouldn't forget. They used to earn quite a self. And, I guess they've always, I don't know whether any of them still living or not. Did you remember any of them?
Not very well. I've heard my mother talk
mm-hmm.
about it.
Mm-hmm. See, that is, she lost all her fortune when the banks closed during the last depression. I think about that now that the stock market is booming.
Mm-hmm.
And they said this morning with the little man, now it's time he'd get in. I said, if the guy is sent, they won't get in that.
Yeah.
He might get out, and he might not.
Mm-hmm. You talking about stuff reminds me that I believe Mr. Nelson, your husband's father, owned some stock in, or owned some property somewhere down on Neal Street, didn't he?
I don't really know. Cecil knew more about it, and Stella can tell you more about it, because she's found out so many things that we didn't know through the old timers at the courthouse.
Mm-hmm.
But at one time, I guess his money kind of was savior for Champagne. But we didn't any of us know he had that much money. And he came in here, I think there was a group of them came looking for work. He and, I think, Mr. Jamerson and Mr. The old man that they own so much there on Wall Street, what did he mean? She died recently, old Mrs. And the mother bought, the son bought the Marsha Williams house.
Oh.
I can't call her name, but they were already an old timer.
McNeil?
Yes, McNeil. Mm-hmm. And, Mr. Phillips's people, of course, they were his people too. And you know, they had a son. I guess it was the first Negro on the university football team, but I can't call his name right now. He looked like white. That's
Overton.
Mm-hmm.
Duke Overton.
Duke Overton.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Whose son?
He was related in there with the McNeils and the Phillips in there. They were related somewhere.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. And of course the Browns, Ollie Brown, this man, they said that it was in the paper, you know, Dorothy Thompson told me to read the vital statistics and I'd see something of interest. So it told about the Ellis's. I don't know, it must have been when he worked for the city. I thought he worked for Urban League. I think he was signed down at the bottom. Did you see that this last week or
John Ellis?
Uh-huh. About the property, Brown property on the, what's the Champagne Street, right back at Arnold Yarber.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
Black
I
Satin,
something.
You know, as they called her.
Yeah.
She was married to him.
Uh-huh.
And he died. That was Ollie Rogers' uncle, I think.
That's behind the poor boy.
Yeah, and they said he was a full-fledged policeman in Champaign for years.
Hmm?
This man,
his name?
Brown.
Is that
I don't know what his name was, but it was Ollie Brown's uncle. And the property said taxes hadn't been paid, I guess, in years, and they was advertising for sale.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw that in the paper.
And I guess Bill McDuff was married to the daughter, Emma. Mr. Martin used to tell us about that. He was an old timer. Now, he was kind of industrious.
Yeah.
When times got hard, he made it on his own, selling them sandwiches and things.
He sure did. He lived on
Champaign Street. And he's some of the ones that tried to save the family property. See, his dad had owned that place, and he died, I guess. And
Martin?
Uh-huh. His father
had owned
that property. And none of the rest of them wanted to be bothered with it, so I guess he took it up. And he built the house that he was in, and the other house where the Legion Hall used to be made into a restaurant. And then I guess when he died, you know, the whole family that was in relation came in for their share, but it was all Romanians because they hadn't done nothing about it.
Mm-hmm.
But so many kids, you know, there was a grand rush, they said. Some before we got here and some after we came, and the people that had been business people. Now, one person that I forgot to tell you about was Mrs. Watkins. I can't remember her name, but she and her husband belonged to our church when we first came there.
We were talking about the Watkins, I believe, and you were telling something about what they had done.
Well, they just died and left their estate to the church.
They left their full estate
mm-hmm.
to the church.
I think.
And that was what church?
Bethel.
Bethel. Mm-hmm. Okay. The other question I had for you was, what changes have you seen for black people in your lifetime that you've been having? I know it's a pretty big question all at once, but just think of
well,
some of the
I
changes.
Well, I've seen them come into better jobs, being more accepted, you know, like when they started taking them. I don't know what year it was that they started them teaching, you know. I think the Hersey girl, Mary Louise, I think, was the first black teacher, wasn't she?
And where was that?
At Lawhead.
At Lawhead.
Mm-hmm. And then May Hawkins came. I don't know whether she came as a principal or not, but I think she was the principal before she left.
And that was Lawhead, too.
Uh-huh, and Lizzie.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't know whether Odelia came ahead of Ebola's daughter. You know, she taught up there, I think. I think, though, she taught in the... Oh, what is she taught down here?
Ebola Jordan?
Uh-huh, Chloe Ann. I think she taught at Booker T. I don't know whether she started in Washington or Bowhead or not. And in the meantime, I don't even remember where Willard came in there somewhere. Ruth Hines said that she and Carolyn went to Willard a while when they lived on Columbia.
I didn't know. I didn't realize it was open that long.
I thought that's what she was telling me. I don't remember.
Oh, to Columbia School.
Uh-huh.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
No, not to Columbia. To Willard.
Willard.
And then she said they were transferred to Marquette, I think. But I don't know when. I don't remember Willard. I took a stone out of Willard. Got a piece of the stone out of the school. But I should have put the address on there when it.
Mm-hmm. When it was
torn down, but I forgot. But I think the color, the Negroes, you know, mostly had been for the men, but I guess the better paying jobs were the railroad and the university. I think your dad and them, I don't know when they started in the civil service out there. They'd been there a long time. Were they there when I first come to Champaign? I think they were. In 1960, in the mail carriers?
Yeah, he was working over there. I don't think he was in the mail. He was in the
the mail was then was messenger.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
when he first started,
right.
It was
mm-hmm.
just messenger boy. And but he's worked at the University Club mm-hmm. before that.
Mm-hmm. And I know Mr. Lee was over there.
So. Yeah, he was in the presence.
Mm-hmm. But I think that must have started. I think their jobs commenced being updated probably in the early 20s, wasn't it?
Yeah, maybe. Any social changes have you seen?
Well, I've seen. I guess Negro women, black women, were accepted in the, you know, the university social group. Some of the things. And like the, I guess that was because when Miss Valentine was here, I think that's when they started singing with the university chorus, you know, because I sang in the alto section.
Mm-hmm.
And there was quite a few of them. And they, then they went on to this speech mates, which was started by the Baha'is. And they were accepted in there, you know, everybody's in color than they like to have. And there isn't that many now, but they're going, you can't tell. Some meetings are more one, more the other, but it's mostly police.
Can you remember some of the things that Mrs. Valentine did?
Yes, she had a music group, and she taught music to both races, any race. And, well, she really, I think, got people, younger people interested in music that hadn't been before. And in this music group that she had, Fred found a, they got everything over there. And his mother kept a scrapbook. She cut out everything out of the paper, everything that happened, Champagne up until I guess
that
she got
was Valentine?
No, Fred Merrifield.
Oh.
And they took found this book in there, so it was a, you know what, the program, a little booklet, that they had a concert at CME Church, and they saw my name in there, Clifford Jones and I, and I think who was that thing in there? Oh no, Odessa Lashley sang a trio,
uh-huh.
And I had forgotten about it. And she did a lot of things, and then she had other things that she was doing, you know, she went national, I guess that music club, she made it into national
yeah.
club, didn't she?
Mm-hmm. Was Legato
Music Club. Because they used to have conventions and rent buses and go out to New York, and they'd stay in these, I know they stayed in, what is the name of those religious leaders? Seemed like they were the ones that first started breaking the ice. Father Divine was in Detroit, I think. And I don't know who the one, but they said they always stayed in those dormitories where they lived. They let them stay there, you know, for little nothing.
Yeah, it's fee people for
mm-hmm.
little or nothing.
I never did go because I was working and I was cooking, trying to get my kids educated, but a lot of people went.
Mm-hmm. You cooked on campus?
Mm-hmm.
Now?
I can't remember, let's see. But, you know, when I first came here, there wasn't much segregation because we used to go to Briner's down, I think it was on Main Street or Bakey's or someplace. It was an ice cream parlor and they made candy and sold it, and we could go there Sunday afternoon and get the sodas. And they didn't say nothing, but it was when the railroad started bringing all the people in, you know, to work on the tracks and rebuild
yeah.
the railroad, build a new railroad to Chicago. And, the people would just get off from work and come there and try to get a sandwich or something, be just dirty, and then they keep out all of us from going.
Yeah. You messed it up with
uh-huh.
a lot of. Well, unless you can think of something else.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you for
mm-hmm.
letting us come and do this interview.
Well, I don't know. I might have got some things that wasn't so good, and maybe some were better, but sometimes when you're sitting around, you think of something. But
yeah.
That about covers it, and I'm not the only person. Somebody else can think of something.
Yeah, that's true.